गुड मॉर्निंग
गुड
गुड
मॉर्निंग,
मॉर्निंग
क्या चलते
मॉर्निंग मॉर्निंग
मैंने मैंने
मॉर्निंग मॉर्निंग जस्ट द चेयरपर्सन रिक्वेस्टेड दैट वी स्टार्ट एट 5 past 9. ही इज जस्ट गोइंग फॉर एन इंटरव्यू. इफ यू कैन वेट अ लिटिल बिट.
ओके ओके
Hey, legal. Okay.
Yeah, ndi repeat my dad would say actually yani.
Yeah, and long time, eh?
It's long time in the schedule, man.
Lawyer,
You know what can be do, man? Larry lawyer, man.
I sit on a committee. I sit on a committee.
Oh, I'm not committing more, yeah.
Get somewhere else.
Get somewhere else, yeah, I think so.
Hey.
But sometimes I think it looks like it comes from committing a game, man.
I don't think so. It might look like
Okay.
that. Okay. All right.
That matters.
Hey. No, okay, no more meeting as well.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Maro bophelong tse botla hantle.
Yeah, well, all right.
Okay.
Okay.
Ke le bontate.
All right.
Good morning, veteran Lukota. How are you?
No, I'm very well, my brother. How are you?
I'm okay. Mara rena re tla be re o lawyer re o ba disa yema.
Come on, nigga.
Re tla be re o lawyer re o ba disa yema.
Why wa se ba ka nnete ya ha ke na letho ha butswe tshelete ha ke tsene
so bo le go botla sa bo not in this committee definitely
yeah no etse ha ke go le ha le na mabaka ka nnete
a re le ba ba ka le ya bonyane no welcome back thank you
thank you very much thank you very much comrade yeah.
My name is Tamatonta.
Morning, Chair. Yes, it's 6 past now. If you can start with the meeting, Chair.
Okay, thanks very much, Mr. Matonsi, and thanks for noting my apology. Morning, honorable members. Morning, the Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, and all the Home Affairs Department, our officials in attendance. We're
Recording
going
in progress.
to the first and second quarter report for the financial year 2022-2023. And that will be led by the introduced by the minister. We'll then have to interface with the content advisor's comment on the report that we have scheduled to interact with it today. We are going to also give time for the minister to deal with some of the issues which were brought before the attention of the chair in relation to the queries that have been submitted and the lack of a response to that extent. Request the minister to deal with that area as they respond to the issues. I think members will then input on some of the issues. On the other hand, we must appreciate the minister and the DG for your team who has taken more interest on the issues that are arising from the community. Complaints that we have submitted, I can attest that at least in some France, there's a huge progress in terms of acknowledging the letters, interacting with those that have complained, and they come to us, come back to us to appreciate the work that we have circulated for your attention. They do report in terms of the updates that you have been could have been responded to them. We must take that appreciation to your staff and the DDGs. We are not going to invite the Mr. Matonsi to run apologies, and then I will ask the minister if they're in apologies to render. And then we'll invite them to present the reports. Mr. Matonsi?
Yes, Chairperson. The only apology is from Ms. Lehwase. She's already in the meeting. She says she's leaving at 10 just to attend for another meeting. That's all she has from my side.
Okay. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Members. Let me give over to the DG to introduce the staff which is attending this meeting with you. Thank you, DG.
Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. From Civic Services, we joined by DDG Thomas Sigama, and then from the Counter-Corruption Security Services, it's Advocate Constance Muitse, and then representing Acting DDG HR, Mayor Dambane Molefe-Sfanyetso, and then, of course, we have Acting DDG, Mr. Yusuf Simons for Immigration Services, and then from the ministry, Mr. Madie Tamakua, the Chief of Staff, Modupi Maisela Kamdluli, Muzi Njokwe, and then of course we have one apology from DDG Thulani Mavuso, who's finalizing interviews as part of the capacitation business case. So that's the team from our side. Thank you, Minister.
Can I check if the commissioners of the BMA are in attendance or not?
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Minister. From the Border Management Authority, I am representing the authority. Dr. Masia Pato is here. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Minister, then you can introduce the report. Thank you.
Yeah, Chairperson, as you know, we are presenting the first and the second quarter reports. The only thing I can mention, as you'll notice when the report is made, is that during the first quarter, it was a little bit slowish to catch up, but we started catching up during the second quarter. But anyway, let me give over to the DG to present the report to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks, Minister. I'm not sure if Mr. Adam, are you uploading the presentation or is it from our side, Muzi? So, Chairperson, we presenting the quarter one and quarter two performance presentation to yourselves, the portfolio committee. Muzi, are you winning? Oh, thanks. If it's Muzi, then that's fine. So if we can have the presentation on a slide mode, that will then assist. The second slide basically speaks, Chairperson, to the presentation for both first and second quarter. But also we will also highlight the budget versus how far we've gone in terms of expanding with regards to the identified projects that we tabled in the annual performance plan. And the third slide then speaks to just a reminder to the portfolio committee about our vision, mission and value statements. And the vision basically, just to recap, it's a South Africa where identity, status and citizenship are key enablers of citizen empowerment, inclusivity and economic development and national security. And then our vision, our mission, we carry out our mission in line with our commitment to citizen empowerment, inclusivity, economic development and national security. How do we do this? We do this by ensuring that we efficient and ensure that we secure custodian of citizenship and civil registration, but also securely and strategically managing international migration and also managing asylum seekers efficiently. And then, of course, efficiently determining and safeguarding the official identity and status of persons. Of course, the value statement, so these are the values that we espouse. We committed to being people-centered, caring, patriotic, professional, and, of course, showing leadership. We'll want to ensure that we're effective, efficient, innovative, ethical, and having integrity, security conscious, and development oriented. So that's the value statement. If we move to slide five, Chairperson, it basically speaks to our mandate. Our mandate straddles around three areas. The first one is really the management of citizenship and civil registration. The second one is management of international migration. And the third one, management of refugee protection. And then we then move, Chairperson, to the outcomes that have been identified by the Department of Home Affairs in the strategic framework on the MTSF for the next 5 years. We have identified the following outcomes, five. One is to secure management of international migration, which we hope will result in South Africa's interests being served and fulfilling, of course, the international commitments that we've made. The second one is to ensure we secure an efficient management of citizenship and civil registration to fulfill not only international obligations, but also our constitutional obligations. And then, of course, issues related to asylum seeker and refugee system in compliance with both our domestic and international obligation. And the fourth one speaks to ensuring that we secure the population register to empower citizens, enable inclusivity and economic development and national priority. And then, of course, we also contribute positively to a capable and developmental state. So if we then move to the critical slides that look at the performance of quarter one and quarter two. If you look at the pie chart that's on the deck or on slide six, it splits the performance into quarter one on your left and quarter two on your right. For quarter one, Chairperson, the areas highlighted in green were able to achieve 50% of the 34 targets that were planned for the first quarter. And of these, 17 we achieved, that translates to 50%, and then the other 50%, which is highlighted in red, was not achieved. And there are a number of reasons why we've not been able to attain some of the targets. One of them has been the issue around the backlog that we have in the immigration space, which we are attending to by doing about three things. One, it's increasing capacity to process on or adjudicate on the visa applications. Of course, the second one has been to bring in additional staff to assist us with regards to the backlogs. And also the third one is really to ensure that the missions abroad are able to finalize any of the applications. We hope once we've started implementing those measures, and we hope that in quarter three, we should be able to have an upward swing of the performance. If you look at quarter two, Chairperson, you can already see that we're moving upwards. We're able, of the 37 targets that were planned for the second quarter, 21 of these were achieved and 16 targets were not achieved. Well, that will then be able to provide a breakdown in terms of areas that we are working on. If we can move to the second. This is the quarter one performance per program for administration, where 21 targets that were planned were only able to achieve 10, translating to 48%. and then 52 of these were not achieved, translating to about 11 of them. And then citizen affairs, four targets were planned for the period under review. We're able to achieve four, sitting at 100%. Immigration as affairs, planned targets were three, and we're only able to achieve one, translating to 33%. And the ones that were not achieved were two. For the reasons that I've highlighted in the introduction, Chairperson, institutional support and transfers, and this is where the BMA also sits, with six planned targets, we're only able to achieve two, translating to about 33. Of course, it means that 67 of these were not achieved. And you'll see later in the other presentations the upward swing that the BMA has brought. So that's the breakdown in terms of the 50% achieved and the 50% not achieved. So for quarter two, the picture changes. Administration at the 24 planned targets, we're able to achieve 13, 54%, citizen affairs, four, and then we're able to achieve three, the drop there by one target that was not achieved, and we'll highlight the reasons. Immigration, four, and then they were not able to achieve three. Mr. Simons will provide details in terms of what is being done in this area. Institutional support and transfers. This is again where the BMA sits, and you can see the improvement that has largely been brought about by the achievement in the BMA. With five planned targets, we're able to achieve four. There's one that was not achieved. That performance sits at 80%. That translates to 50%, 57% of the quota performance that was achieved and 43 not achieved. If we can move to the next one. The next one then gives a comparative analysis per branch and per quota in terms of the performance. So on your right, it's quota one, and on your left, it's quota two. If you look at citizen services, civic affairs, they had four that I said in the first quarter, they were able to achieve 100%. But if you look at quarter two, there's one target that was not achieved, and we'll then provide reasons as we move forward to the other slide. IMS, they were sitting at three for quarter one, 33. And of course, there's a regression again, they're sitting at 25%. BMA, quarter one, they were sitting at 33%, chairperson, 67% not achieved. And if you look at quarter two, remarkable recovery from the BMA, now sitting at 80% out of the five targets that were planned, four of these were achieved. There was only one that was not achieved, attributed mainly to the measures that have been set in place and also the governance processes that are now in place to make sure that they were able to attain these targets. IS, which is information systems, had four planned targets and were only able to achieve three, translating to 75%. Of course, they've got one that they were not able to achieve. And then there's a regression. In quarter two, they were sitting at 60%, two targets had not achieved. IPS, four, and they were not able to achieve 375. And then you can see the upward trajectory. They're now sitting at 67%, one target not achieved. HR, in quarter one, they were sitting at 50%. In quarter two, they've been able to achieve all their targets, sitting at 100%. Counter corruption and security services, they were sitting at 50% in quarter one. And then, of course, quarter two, they're sitting at 75%. And then DG's office sitting at 43% in quarter one. And then in quarter two, we were sitting at 30%. That will provide the reasons for some of the challenges that we encounter. So that then gives you a breakdown. And the legend below the green arrow with an upward arrow, it means there's an improved performance. And if it remains stagnant, it's unchanged. And then the red one that's pointing downwards is the regression. You can note the regression for civic services, IMS, and also IS and the DG's office. So if you look at the two quarters, there was an increase of 7% in quarter two if we were to compare that with quarter one of the 2022-23 financial year. If we can move to the next slide. The next slide provides performance by program. And we'll then start with the administration targets. And so in quarter one, we set out to ensure that the stabilization report for airport rollout is signed off by the DDG IMS to to confirm the readiness of environment for the BMCS, which is the biometric movement control implementation. You'll recall in the last financial year we procured this equipment, and we are happy to report that in the first quarter we're able to achieve this by ensuring that the stabilization report for airport rollout was signed off. Similarly with quarter two for the land port, that was also approved by DDG IMS. So that's the performance on the BMCS for both quarter one and quarter two. If you look at the next slide, this is the one that was looking at the upgrades of the network at 54 ports that I identified. This target was not due, Chairperson, during quarter one for this financial year. This target was only set for quarter two, and the progress report is that 15 ports of entry have been upgraded with two megabyte lines. That's the progress that we've made. And then if you move to the next slide then speaks to the change request for the e-visa system enhancement. We had to enhance the system so that it gives us optimal performance. For quarter one, we were able to achieve that target. So the change request for the enhancement was approved by DDG IMS. However, in quarter two, we're not able to achieve that target. And the reason for the underachievement is that we also had to downscale some of the activities to ensure that the Lava Rock Phase 3 release is then finalized. Of course, there was also delays caused by the testing that had to be done for the ABIS, which was prioritized as we plan to go live on the 14th of November. So the way forward is that the e-visa enhancement will be implemented in the third quarter of this financial year. If we can move to the next one. The next one speaks to the asylum seeker and refugee system, which needs to be developed into live capture. For quarter one, we're supposed to ensure that the functional design is approved by the DDG IS, and it was done. Similarly, for quarter two, a progress report was provided to the executive committee through the weekly meetings on the annual performance plan targets. If we move to the next one, the next one speaks to the ABIS Phase 2 operational iris infant footprint palm print backend recognition. What we're supposed to do in quarter one was to ensure that DDGIS finalizes the draft front end and back end business requirement gathering and specification. That was not done. The business process management has been signed off on the user acceptance testing. And then in quarter two, we hope that this work will then gather momentum as we move towards the operationalization of ABIS. If we can move to the next slide, just then gives an indication of the reasons for the underachievement. Still on the ABIS, one, of course, is the lack of the critical skills and the number of resignations in the IS branch. We are capacitating that unit. There's 10 additional positions from the capacitation initiative that we're utilizing to fill those vacancies. And of course, there was a portfolio committee will be familiar with the fact that there was one chief director who was dismissed for lack of paying attention or negligence with regards to the funds that were paid to SITA for services not delivered. So the way forward, the approval of the front end and back end business requirements will then be finalized by DDG IS during this financial or during this quarter that's under review. Can move to the next one. DHA Basel gazetted for public consultation. This was not achieved following guidance that was provided by the minister. What we picked up was that both in government and not only at Home Affairs, but also in the Solicitor General's office, there's a lack of capacity in terms of assisting us with the legislative drafting. So we have then gone out to the market to look for experts with regards to legislative drafting. And we hope that by quarter three, we should be able to submit that bill to the various government clusters for further consultation. Already, we have draft zero on the DHA bill that's been finalized. If we can move to the next slide. The next slide just gives the reasons for the underachievement. I've indicated one of the reasons was that the unit did not have a head until today, but we are filling that position of a legislative drafter. We are also appointing independent legislative drafters to assist us through a procurement process. If we can move to the next one. The next target was on the draft National Identification and Registration Bill. We're now sitting on a draft zero on the National Identification and Registration Bill. Legal Services has now developed an implementation plan which outlines the drafting steps that will be undertaken. And of course, the consultation in relation to the relevant clusters where we need to present this. And then, of course, the internal processes need to be aligned to the approval that we will seek from the minister and, of course, the cabinet processes. So it basically focuses on three areas. One, it's the cluster consultations, the management of the DHA milestones, and then identifying the risks and the mitigation measures that we've put in place to make sure that we finalize the draft National Identification and Registration Bill. So if we can move to the next one. The next one, I've already spoken to this. If we can move to the next one. It's the draft marriage bill submitted to the minister for approval. We're now sitting on a draft zero. Again, it's part of the implementation measures that we are working on. It will be presented to clusters on the management of the milestones, which is an internal measure. And then, of course, the identification of those risk and mitigation measures. So if you look at both quarters, we're not able to achieve this target. So we can move to the next one. Again, we're appointing a specialist legislative drafter to assist the department with regards to that. If we can move to the next one. This is critical, the draft one-stop border post bill, which was supposed to be submitted to Minister for approval. Currently sitting on draft zero for the OSBP bill. And then we have also developed an implementation plan. Again, it focuses on those three areas, cluster consultations, management of milestones, and then internal processes that we need to focus on. So that work is it's underway through procurement to make sure that the service providers are identified and brought on board ASAP. We can move to the next one. Yeah, the next one mainly speaks to the work that's being done by our comms unit. In quarter one, we planned to have 5 media engagements, 2 outreach engagements, and 1 campaign, and that was done with an overachievement of the outreach engagements. And then quarter two, 5 media engagements, 2 outreach engagements. And if you look at the achievement, 8 outreach engagements were conducted and 2 campaigns were done in the 5 media engagements. If we can move to the next one. The next target, the portfolio committee will be familiar with the fact that this target has now been moved to the next financial year. And to this end, the Minister of Home Affairs has written to both the Speaker and also the Chairperson of the MCOP. And this emanated mainly from the developments that necessitated us to consult further with experts outside the department and key stakeholders before we come back with this green paper. However, what we've done, if we move to the next slide, this has been replaced with a civil registration chapter, which has been revised and submitted to DDG for IPS comment. And that target has now been achieved after it was revised and submitted for comments. If we can move to the next one. The next one speaks to the revised service delivery norms and standards in line with the SDM approved by the minister. This was not achieved both in quarter one and quarter two, as well as the footprint and model office design. It's critical for our footprint, and we believe that by quarter three, we would have finalized this work, including the achievement of the annual target. If we can move to the next slide. This slide just gives an indication that there was a need for further stakeholder consultation before this work is finalized, and we are now finalizing the submission on the service delivery norms to the minister. If we can move to the next one. The next one is on the draft user requirements that we have submitted. This is in line with the approved strategic accommodation requirements, which has been submitted to the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure as part of our the DHA access model. So for quarter one and quarter two, we've been able to achieve this target. In quarter one, that submission was done to National Treasury for infrastructure budget determination, and then quarter two, again, we had to submit that to the DPWNI. So that target, both quarters achieved. If we move to the next one. The next one speaks to the DHA gender-based violence and femicide plan implemented as per approved implementation plan. We were able to achieve this target both in quarter one and quarter two. We ensured that in quarter one there was an implementation plan that was approved, and then all business units have also made contributions and were consulted, and we're now delivering against the relevant elements of our GBV implementation plan. In quarter two, again, we are delivering according to the relevant elements of the implementation plan, and we've now finalized the three monthly progress reports, first one in July, August, and September, and all of them have been submitted to the Department of Women, Youth, and People with Disabilities. If we can move to the next one. The next one is 60% of misconduct cases concluded within 90 days. We're not able to achieve this target in quarter one. In quarter one, there were 18 officials that were served with charges and duly acknowledged as we ramp up consequence management in the department. Out of these 18, only 6 cases were completed within that target timeline, and 12 cases are in progress, translating to 66.6%. However, in quarter two, we were able to serve 15 officials with charges that were duly acknowledged. Out of the 15, 11 of these cases were finalized. This translates to 73%, all within the target timeline. And the last one is that 4 of these cases are yet to be completed, but we've already exceeded the respective target date. We've also brought in additional capacity to enforce this issue around consequence management in the form of law firms that are assisting us to finalize some of these misconduct cases. If you look at the next target, we've indicated some of the challenges in finalizing on this slide the misconduct cases, and the long and short is that some of these cases were not finalized due to officials being hospitalized. Of course, others will indicate that they are going through a bereavement, and then others on long sick leave, and then in certain instances, it's been the unavailability of witnesses. So we have now a dedicated team from head office that's assigned to verify the disciplinary backlogs, and they are facilitating the eradication of this backlog. And we hope we should be able to finalize this backlog within the current financial year. And we've also consolidated a number of cases, and we are working very close with our team from internally counter-corruption that's able to do verification on some of where we are with regards to that. And then, of course, the integrated case management system, which was then engaged in quarter two. Of course, we've also circulated standard operating procedures on discipline to all labor relations practitioners in the provinces. We have also had a workshop much earlier in the year with all labor relations practitioners. If we can move to the next slide. The next slide then speaks to the targets on the 4 DHA business processes that were supposed to be evaluated to evaluate, to identify possible vulnerabilities to fraud, corruption, and security breaches. So for quarter one, there was one process that was evaluated. This mainly focused on late registration of birth, or LRB, and the focus was on four provinces, Gauteng, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and Limpopo. And then we also looked at nine offices. All these offices were visited for information gathering, but also evaluation of how they run the LRB processes and to monitor if implementation of recommendations from previous reports were done and adhered to. So that was done and achieved. Quarter two, one process evaluated, and the evaluation mainly focused on the ID applications to determine whether officials are sticking to the standard operating procedures. So in quarter two, we were able to visit Gauteng, KZN, and the Eastern Cape provinces, again, to evaluate the ID application process. If we can move to the next target, 66 of reported cases on fraud and corruption that were supposed to be finalized within 90 working days. In this period under review, there were 35 cases that were received. 16 of these were finalized within 90 working days, and the 12 were outside the 90 working days. There are still 7 cases under investigation, and the performance was 46% during quarter one. And of course, you do recall that under quarter one, there was quite a lot of work that was being done by counter corruption with regards to the photo swap cases that were reported in Krugersdorp. As we were dealing with Krugersdorp, we then highlighted to some of these practices outside the Gauteng province, mainly in Mpumalanga, in Limpopo, Western Cape, and then the team had to pursue those cases. So we have now put in place plans to prioritize the achievement of this target. And you can see in quarter two, due to the measures that TDG Counter Corruption has been able to put in place, in quarter two, that 66 cases, 47 cases were finalized within 90 working days, 11 cases were finalized outside the target date. There are still 8 cases that are pending. The performance has now moved to 71.2%. If we can move to the next one, this is the annual target is to ensure that we conduct 80 threat and risk assessments. For this quarter, or for quarter two, it was 20. For quarter one, it was 20 as well. In quarter one, we're not able to achieve the target. We only conducted 14 threat and risk assessments, which were conducted in line with the requirements of the minimum information security standards, the MIS, or the minimum physical security standards, MPSS. Of course, the challenges have been that heads of security in some provinces were given other priority tasks and reported non-achievement towards the end. Remedial measures, we are now putting in place measures to make sure that this target is not missed. In quarter two of the 20, the threat and risk assessments that were conducted, we were able to do 30, so we overachieved by 10, in line with the requirements of the MIS and the MPSS. If we can look at the next target, the next target then looks at the 100 vetting files that were referred to State Security Agency for evaluation. For quarter one, we were able to finalize 450 instead of 100. These files were then referred to SSA for evaluation, and the clearance levels are indicated for top secret, 17 were cleared, secret 22, confidential 411, and the bulk of these applications were mainly for the border management authority, for the border guards that were then deployed to the various areas. And then if you look at quarter two, we're supposed to ensure that 100 vetting files are referred to state security. So we've been able to finalize only 82 of this, and the breakdown is then provided. Of course, the reasons for underachievement of that during quarter two, we focused mainly on the vetting operations, mainly for top secret, because we had to finalize a number of appointments in line with the capacitation business case that we're currently implementing. And then, of course, the way forward is that we'll now go back to the original plan and focus on both confidential and the fieldwork operations so that we're able to meet the quarterly target. If we move to the next one, focuses on citizen affairs. on citizen affairs in quarter one, we had planned to ensure that 145,953 births are registered within 90 calendar days. We're able to overachieve the target. We set 192,977 at the end of the quarter. And then in quarter two, we're supposed to make sure that we register 206,661 births. We're not able to achieve this target. We registered 199,721. And of course, the reasons for underachievement are highlighted. Amongst them, of course, production hours lost due to load shedding. And I must say this mainly affects offices that do not have alternative power sources such as generators. You'll recall, Chair, that we installed a number of generators at most of our modernized offices. And then, of course, in certain instances, it was water outages. You'll also recall that we've installed a number of water tanks outside most of our offices. Of course, there are still those that do not have water tanks and rely on municipalities. And then, of course, issues related to system downtime and no online verification at health facilities. And then there were other technical challenges related to live capture birth registration. What is it that we're doing with regards to this? Of course, we now have working towards ensuring that in certain instances where generators are there, to make sure that you have a maintenance plan, but also plans to address system downtime challenges. I think we have an opportunity to come and share with the portfolio committee when we present on the achievement that we are making with CETA in certain areas. In certain areas, there's still gaps with regards to the commitments that have been made by CETA. If we can move to the next slide. The next slide speaks to the smart ID cards issued to citizens 16 years of age and above. For quarter one, we had set out to ensure that 572,000 targets smart cards are issued. We're able to overachieve, sitting at 667,246. The performance continued on the same trajectory. In quarter two, we had set out to issue 550,000. We're able to achieve 609,000. That's for citizen affairs. If we move to the next target, it speaks to the number of machine-readable passports. For both quarter one and quarter two, we were able to achieve this target. In quarter one, we set at 97.7%, which means we overachieved by 7%. And then in quarter two, 91.73% on the machine-readable passports, mainly for adults. And then the next one speaks to the passports, mainly for children. Of course, that was also achieved in both quarter one and quarter two. For quarter one, 99.41, and quarter two, we're sitting at 98.9% in terms of achievement. If we move to immigration services, for quarter one, we had to undertake 135 law enforcement operations inspections for targeted areas that are identified in the APP to ensure compliance with immigration legislation. We were able to undertake 182 inspections. Of course, the bulk of these focused on issues related to illegal mining, and that continued as well in quarter two. And that's the breakdown that's provided. It does not mean that other provinces, if they're not listed, they were not doing anything. There was a lot of activities that were being conducted. And if you look at quarter two, we're able to undertake 213 business inspections in the various provinces and also those that were led by head office. If we move to the next one, Chairperson speaks to 85% of applications for permanent residence. For quarter one, we're not able to achieve due to the fact that there was no population for that. And quarter two, we're not able to achieve that target. And of course, I spoke to issues around capacitation at a first quality assurance level to make sure that the applications are go through due diligence. What is it that we have done in this area? We've increased capacity of adjudicators, and we're adding an additional 16. And also we've assigned these functions to other officials from provinces, including provincial managers and other DDGs, to ensure that they assist us towards the attainment of this target. With regards to the next three slides, I think it's better if I speak to it here. We, on critical skills, on business and work visas, we set up a task team led, of course, by our minister and the minister of the TTIC, and then at administration level, it's led by myself and the DG of the DTIC, that was tracking mainly business, critical, and work visas to make sure that these are tracked and finalized quickly for these areas. And in the period under review, we've been able now to finalize at least 608 of these applications related to major business investments in the country. And then, of course, you'll recall that by 12th of January, we had revoked some of the powers that missions had to finalize visas following some of the issues that were raised by Dr. Lubisi when he presented to the portfolio committee. But we've since now allowed missions to finalize visas except for retirement and permanent residence. And this was, of course, linked to the main findings around some of the activities that were happening at some of the missions, in particular irregularities and malfeasance. So that's with regards to permanent residence. It's with also with regards to critical skills, the measures are the same. If we can move to the next one, Mosi, business and general work visas. If we can move to the next one, I've already indicated what is it that's being done with regards to this area. Institutional support and transfers, including, of course, the PMA. If we can look at the next slide. In quarter one, we're supposed to fill key management positions, mainly at corporate services at the PMA, comprising the chief director responsible for border control, chief director national targeting center, chief director corporate support, and then we're also supposed to ensure the transfer of functions from Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, Health and SAPS to the PMA according to Section 97 of the Constitution finalized and was supposed to be submitted to the affected ministers. We're not able to achieve this during quarter one. And of course, the discussions have continued with the Department of Public Service and Administration to make sure that they evaluate, as you know, the PMA is a new structure. So any position in government that you're about to advertise needs to go through an evaluation process at the DPSA. And as a result, we then finalize the advertisements in quarter two, which means in quarter three, we'll move with speed to make sure that these vacancies are filled. And then we're also supposed to get those concurrent letters. So those were activities that we're supposed to undertake, we're not able to achieve. If you look at quarter two, the PMA budget structure submitted to National Treasury. Chairperson, this was done, it's been submitted to National Treasury, and the Treasury has advised that an outcome should be provided to the PMA by yesterday, and I hope Commissioner will be able to share whether we've received that outcome from National Treasury with regards to that. If we move to the next target, the next target focused mainly on the, well, these are just the reasons I've spoken to, but we've since made a lot of progress with regards to this area. The next target then speaks to the port of entry rollout plans approved by the PMA commissioner, and then the risk mitigation plans approved by the PMA commissioner. These were not done during quarter one, however. In quarter two, the PMA was rolled out at the ports that are identified in the deck. And then in terms of Section 97 pertaining to the transfer of functions, and that was then signed off. As you recall, the proclamation was signed off by the president and has been gazetted. So that target has been achieved. If we can move to the next slide, just provides mitigation measures, and it's indicated that the reasons why we're not able to achieve that was because the conclusion of the Section 97 proclamations on the transfer functions, the target depended on some of these activities. And of course, due to the above, BMA had to embark on a multi-agency approach where ports are monitored in that multi-agency approach. And of course, under that period, some of those ports of entry were still closed. However, they've since been reopened. Okay, if we move to the next one, rollout of the BMA to the Free State, Lesotho segment of the land border law enforcement. The target was achieved. BMA border guards were appointed for deployment along that segment. Well, I think by now they've gone commissioner through induction and training. They've deployed it. She called that by the 14th. By the minister.
DG, there's somebody who's disrupting the presentation. Mr. Matonsi, can you assist us? Who's that? Okay, you can proceed, DG. Sorry for that.
Thank you, Chair. So for quarter one, we were able to do that. So that's been done. As I was saying, the minister inaugurated the first 200 border guards. In quarter two, we rolled out to the Eastern Cape and Lesotho segment. And then, of course, there's still work that's underway. For quarter one, with regards to the BMA assuming responsibilities for facilities management at 31 identified land ports of entry, for quarter one, we're supposed to ensure that that process is initiated and concluded with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure in accordance with the State Asset Disposal Act. And the progress that we can report is that an agreement has been reached with the DPWI on the process for the BMA to assume responsibility for facilities management, and BMA and the DPWI have jointly stated the process by identifying the 31 ports of entry for auditing, and that process was underway. I think it's been concluded now. For quarter two, we're supposed to ensure the available facilities at the 31 identified ports of entry audited, and you can note that progress that the available facilities at 31 ports of entry have been audited. If we move to the next one. The next one, it's mainly, there was no target that was due, Chairperson, for quarter one. However, for quarter two, we should have finalized the bids evaluation. We're not able to do this. We're not able to achieve this target as the approval for the issuance of the request for proposal or the RFP document to the market is still awaiting, awaited from National Treasury. And the reasons were that further consultations were still required between ourselves, National Treasury, and the Revenue Service with regards to ensuring that the RFP includes aspects. As you know, that at the port of entry, we operate with other government entities, and therefore we had to make sure that the SARS input is received and it's included as part of the RFP. That work has been done. We now are awaiting Treasury to give us an indication as to when this work will be finalized. If we can move to the next one. So the next set of slides will deal with the budget versus expenditure, Chairperson, for both quarter one and quarter two, but also will give you an indication as to how are we performing with regards to the 30-day payment of invoices. CFO, if you can take the next few slides. I'll then come back, Chairperson, with the way forward and conclude. Therefore.
Thank you, DG, and good morning, Chairperson, Minister, Deputy Minister, the members and my colleagues. This is the expenditure as at the 30th of June 2022. Chairperson, our budget is 9.4 billion rands. Of that budget, we spent 2.1 billion. Equating to 23.2% spent. The spending on Program 2, Citizen Affairs, at 71% appears to be very high. But I must point out that as is the custom, Chairperson, that we are expending the self-financing against program two. So once we get the additional allocation in January, that expenditure will be pulled correctly. Chairperson, also on this slide, important to note is the revenue collection of 157, the expenditure on self-financing, which is 157 million. You'll see that's not in accordance with, there's no budget allocated for that at this point in time, but that will also come as part of the adjustments later in January. Chairperson, the next slide just gives you in slide 60, it's the one that will give you the same information for quarter one in respect of economic classifications. In this regard, it's just important to note the spending on compensation of employees, 23.6%, and goods and services, 27.9%. The other expenditure is in line, so we're still in line with at quarter one on the expenditure trends. Chairperson, slide 61 gives the expenditure as at the end of quarter one for the provinces. I think we can note from this from this slide, Chairperson, that all the provinces are not under pressure. They are spending according to plan. So it's looking good from a provincial perspective. Slide 62, Chairperson, deals with the revenue collected. At the end of quarter one, the department collected 144 million rands. This is only local revenue, Chairperson. So you will recall my discussion just now on the self-financing aspect, Chairperson. In terms of this agreement, the agreement we have with National Treasury, the department must collect money. The money we then collect can be used to offset expenditure for the production of enabling documents, the cash in transit, security services, and so forth. Slide 63 is just an indication on 30-day payments for quarter one. Chairperson, we keep records of this for every month. We are in a position to tell you which invoice was not paid within 30 days. For quarter one, there were 21 invoices not paid within 30 days. The total value of those 21 invoices is 1.2 million rands. Chairperson, these invoices were subsequently paid. They were just not paid within 30 days. So Chairperson, we do not have challenges with 30-day payments, but we are trying to reduce that. And as you see, our quarter two figures shows an improvement on 30-day payments. Slide 64, if I can ask that we just move to that one. Chairperson, gives the same information as the information I indicated in respect of quarter one. Again, our budget is 9.4 billion rands. Of that, we spent 4.4 billion rands at the end of September. That equates to 47.6%. Chairperson, if you then look at compensation is 47.4% spent. So if you do a linear on compensation, Chairperson, you would have expected us to be at 50%, but we are close and we are still filling post the positions. So compensation of employees is not under pressure currently, but we are filling post. Goods and services is 60.7%, Chairperson. That's higher than 50% if you do a linear, but that includes the self-financing expenditure. That's also going to be adjusted once we get the adjustments estimates in January. And so then that expenditure will reduce and be aligned. So Chairperson, if you look overall, I must perhaps also deal with the one on buildings and fixed structures. There's a 220% spend on buildings and fixed structure in this quarter. Chairperson, we are doing a journal, so that expenditure will smooth out. The total spent as at the end of a quarter is 47.6%, so we are not under terrible pressure when it comes to budget issues, Chairperson. Chairperson, the next couple of slides 65, 66, 67, give the detail per program. Perhaps let me just deal with program one, which is ministry management support services, corporate services, and transversal IT information technology. Chairperson, if you look at this one, it's 48.8% spent at the end of the second quarter, which is below the 50% linear projection, but also a good indication that we will be able to spend our budget. Slide 66 is the one that deals with Program 2, Citizen Affairs. Chairperson, again, there's the impact of the self-financing expenditure. It's lying under status services. You'll see there that while the budget was 86 million rands, we have already spent 413 million rands. But Chairperson, that's not a cause of concern because we will be getting that money from revenue and allocated to self-financing and then clear that overspending. Chairperson, the slide 67, again, is just giving you a presentation of the expenditure at the province. The provinces are all spending well. None of them are under pressure, as you would have expected them to be at 50% more or less at this point in time. 46.4% is a good indication. Chairperson, slide number 68 is the expenditure for immigration services. The one that seems high is immigration affairs management, 68.5%, and IMS operations in particular, the 68%. So Chairperson, the spending under the other programs are rather slow, so we will make sure that this program does not overspend. Chairperson, then on BMA and the institutional program four, the spending on BMA is a bit slow. They are making appointments and there are procurement orders issued for additional vehicles, equipment, uniforms, which will come through in the third quarter. The expenditure on represented political parties fund is dead on 50%. The Electoral Commission is a bit under at 35.1%, but that's also in accordance with the cash flow projections and cash drawings. Chairperson, we expect to spend all the budget in program four. We may have some savings under BMA. The slide 70 is just then to give an indication of the revenue we collected. We collected at the end of quarter two, we collected 357 million. Again, Chairperson, this is just local revenue. Slide number 71 gives you the report on 30-day payments. Chairperson, for the second quarter, there were 12 invoices to the value of 306,000 rands that were not paid within 30 days. Again, these invoices were subsequently paid. They were just not paid within 30 days. Chairperson, in respect of invoices not paid within 30 days, we have a process where we issue hourly letters to the responsible person that delays the payment of invoice, and we hold people accountable for the failure to pay invoices within 30 days. Chairperson, slide 72 is just the audit outcome. This was shared at our last meeting with yourselves. It was also, this comes from an audit committee. We have developed an audit action plan. We have implemented our audit action plan, Chairperson, and we committed at our last meeting when we discussed the outcome of the 21-22 financial year, that we will provide regular updates on progress made with the audit action plan and the audit plans itself. In this regard, I can just say that we had a meeting last week with the AG and the Exco to get a debriefing from the AG on what went wrong in the previous audit and why we could not get a clean audit. We are all committed to a clean audit. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, CFO. So just to wrap it up, Chairperson, in terms of the way forward, with regards to targets that are were not achieved in both the first and second quarter, there's a weekly meeting in the morning that I chair to track this target, and DDGs have now developed mitigation measures. So we now meet on weekly on a Wednesday to track and look at what can be done or in those instances. And then, of course, we spoke about the target on the white paper on the management of citizenship, international migration, which has been replaced by this current paper for this financial year. And then, of course, we have added capacity to the permitting unit to improve performance in the adjudication of permits. And we are making a lot of progress. And yesterday we have allowed missions abroad to make sure that any application that would have been received between the 12th of January to the 31st of August, those can then be finalized ASAP. We're currently sitting at about 1,800 of those in the missions abroad. So there's a lot of work that we're putting in this area to make sure that we finalize these permits. And then, of course, in the third quarter, we'll continue to finalize the filling of these positions that we've received funding for, the 742. And of course, we hope it will begin to show the benefits of the additional resources in our office. And below it's the allocation, as you know it, for 22-23 financial year, 266 million. And the following year, 278, and then 2024-25, 291 million. We're now sitting at about 90% of those posts in terms of filling them to make sure that they add value to the offices that have been operating below 40% in terms of staff complement. So that's the end of the presentation, Chairperson and Minister. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, DG, for the detailed report. Members, this is a report presented for our attention. There are areas of improvement, and there are areas or targets not being achieved. I think what is more progressive is the reasons that are also articulated and the mitigating factors that are going to be in place. So to interface with the non-achieved targets. I'm going to invite members to interact with the report. I've already also got an indication from Honorable Lizelle that they should be engaging in another matter immediately at 10 o'clock. So that apology should be noted by the meeting. I will invite Honorable Ross, Honorable Lekota, welcome a veteran after a long time. Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Pilei, Honorable Kanyile, and Honorable Modise Mtsa. In that order, Honorable Ross, if there's any other member join late, they will indicate as we proceed. Thank you, Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the DG for the presentation. And allow me to also welcome Honorable Lekota. I'm glad to see you in good health, and also glad to see that you've changed your profile name from Drama Queen to something more honorable. So welcome back. Chairperson, yes. So firstly, to the department, thank you for engaging with concerned parties about the reported holdups at OR Tambo on the BMCS. We see there is some progress in that. And then congratulations to Civic Services for doing really well on your targets. I think unfortunately permitting, it hasn't gone so well. And we understand that there's currently an investigation underway there, which will certainly affect things. But I think it's something that it seems to be reaching a crisis point. If you look at the critical skills, business and work visas adjudicated on time, I count 132 out of 2,800. So what that means is only 1 in 20 is processed in time. And we're given the reason that that there's a shortage of assistant directors at quality assurance one level. And this makes it impossible for applications to go past this level. So my question here is this due to suspensions? And surely there's a way, if you have quality level one, that somebody on a higher level can take over. Because I would imagine that if it stops at quality assurance level one, that then whoever's at quality assurance level two has nothing to do. So if we could just get clarity on that that aspect. And then, Chair, you know, we've said they must continue with the investigation, but I really believe we need to take a closer look and perhaps even an on-site oversight into what is going on in permitting. I know it's difficult to talk about it here, but really I think we need to be briefed on all the gaps because, you know, to me, this has not come up before that I have seen, that we have a gap in quality assurance, for example, which means that virtually none of these visas are being adjudicated on time. And I really think, you know, we need to be briefed in terms of the impact of this investigation. Are there suspensions? Where are they happening? What are the gaps and how are those gaps going to be filled? Because what is happening is people are suing Home Affairs due to not issuing permits on time. So even this week, I was told that Home Affairs lost a court case in the North Gauteng High Court and the applicant was granted a cost order, and Home Affairs didn't pay. So they went back to court. The applicant was granted a contempt order, and the court issued a warrant of execution. And so the sheriff needs to go and attach over 100 of Home Affairs' computers. And so this is really getting real. It has a real impact. And people are successfully able to sue the Department of Home Affairs and start to attach assets. Chairperson, then, you know, this brings me to another area, which is really legal services. And I think we've seen bill after bill delayed. And remember how this committee was slammed on the Electoral Laws Amendment Bill that took so long. And this report, it mentions a lack of expertise in the legislative drafting unit. And I just want to understand from the DG, how does this happen? I mean, surely you hire lawyers in that department with legislative drafting experience. So if they don't have the skill, then what are they busy with? What are the persons busy with in the legislative drafting unit that don't have the skills? We see a bid to appoint an independent legislative drafter that's been advertised. But why is this skill not being brought in-house? Surely if you don't have the skills in that unit, you bring this independent drafter into your department. And then I'd also like to understand the position of Director of Legal Drafting. How long has this been vacant for? Then in terms of the 10,000 jobs, I think we were informed in the question session this week that they've gone out to tender and they will be issued in tranches. I just want to understand who decides who gets these jobs. Is it the person that got the tender that decides that? And can we get a project plan? Because the plan, I know it's 2,000 and 3,000 and another 2,000 over the next 6 months. It seems extremely ambitious to hire 10,000 people and have the scanners been ordered, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd also like to potentially get that project plan so that we can understand how is this going to roll out? How are the persons going to be employed? Where are they going to be employed? So that we can do oversight on that process. Then on the issue of the prices of passports, so we know they went up today by 50 to 100%. I'd just like to understand how was this figure arrived at, because it's quite a substantial increase. And did you take into account pricing power parity when doing these adjustments? So for example, the power of a rand here in South Africa versus wherever you look elsewhere in the world, where the passport might be more expensive. Another question is, we never see anything in these reports about our offices abroad. It's as if they don't exist. So my question in this regard is really, we've seen in the UK that VFS was brought in to assist with applications there. Is that kind of service going to be rolled out to other countries, and when can we expect that? And then finally, just in terms of the Border Management Authority, I'd just like to understand the 200 BMA border guards, were they transferred from other departments or were they newly appointed? And then it seems like the management positions on the BMA are being filled. And again, you know, in the budget speech, I don't think we expected it now, but I don't see an indication that Treasury is saying, yes, we commit to funding the full rollout cost of the BMA. What is the fallback measure or plan if Treasury doesn't come up with the billions needed for the full rollout? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ross, for your contributions. Veteran Lekota?
Chairperson, thank you very much for...
Can you favor us with your video, if you allow, just to see you a veteran? I was saying, if possible, it's not compulsory, if you can favor us with your video so that we benefit from seeing
I'm here. I'm here, Chair. I thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to join the meeting. I must say that I'm in the closing stages of the attention I'm giving, probably left with only about 6 weeks or so, the final process of eliminating the cancer problems that I had is indicated that is likely to be very, very successful. Chair, I joined this meeting with an idea to warm up to the work that has been done over time. I followed the reports now and then, but sometimes I was not able really to keep up. I was very motivated when I received some well wishes from yourselves, including some, I think it was some sweets or some other thing that members sent. But I think that I saw that the committee was seized with all the work, and I was praying that I should be able to join you again. And in the recent period, I even attempted to go into the discussions on the election, on the bill that we had to face up to, but I wasn't so well indeed, I must say. Now, I cannot make very substantive inputs in this at the moment, and I apologize for not having been thoroughly prepared for this morning, but I'm now with you. I just want to announce really that I am back with you, and I'll be on the move with the committee. Otherwise, thank you very much, Chairperson, for everything.
Thank you, Veteran. And I think we appreciate that you are back. Honorable Mulekwa?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the presentation and the first and second quarter report as presented. Chairperson, I don't have much on the report because on the recommendation, there are remedial action that have been presented on the issues that on program that are not achieved. I just want to say that we take note of the report, and we hope that the department will expedite on the process, expedite the process on making sure that the program that are not being achieved are attended to, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mulekwa. Honorable Pile.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first appreciate the progress that has been made substantially in many of the different units within DHA. Chairperson, I want to raise the first one being the bills. In fact, all bills are on a draft zero. And the question is, when will the independent legislative drafter be appointed? And if the position which is vacant is going to be full, then do we still require the independent drafters? Because I just see that we might be having a incurred a double expenditure. In respect of the DHA bill, marriage bills, and one-stop border post, what are the timeframes that the department is setting in terms of these processes? Chair, then in respect of the update on the network, which we know will definitely address the downtime, where is this process in where we were going to decentralize these either service providers or network connections so that we don't have across the country downtimes when that occurs? I also didn't see an update in respect of the process of LRBs, because there certainly is a backlog. What or where are we in terms of the department around LRBs and finalizing LRBs? In respect of immigration services, Chair, I think it's important for the committee to note that there are still delays and backlogs. And the one that draws my attention is that there's just 56 out of 896 that was finalized, which is actually less than 10% out of two quarters. And I can't see how in the next two quarters that is going to increase tremendously or drastically. Then when is the next cohort of the BMA border guards going to be approved? Has the booking system that we've implemented or piloted and rolled out, assisted in terms of ID applications and passports? And when are we envisaging to introduce the collection of IDs and passports as part of the booking system? Then in respect of smart card IDs, how many of these smart card IDs have not been collected in both the quarters, if there's an estimation? And then the last one, Chair, is on the 10,000 unemployed graduates. Now, I recall that we were informed that the recruitment was going to be done via the Department of Labor. So I just want to seek clarity on why, you know, who is appointing the service provider and what will be their role in respect of this recruitment process. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable, for your contributions. Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to you and the colleagues. Chairperson, I apologize. I'm going to keep my video off. I'm having a problem with the network. And I also would like to apologize in advance, just in case I repeat some of the questions that have been raised. I was at some point locked out of the meeting. I'd like to take this opportunity and appreciate the presentation that we have received from the department and the areas where they have made progress. Also taking note, Chairperson, that the department is has finalized within 90 working days in dealing with the reported cases on fraud of and corruption, and I'd like to commend them for that. Chairperson, the question that I have is with regard to the issue of appointing the legislative drafter. I have noted that the post has been advertised and the closing date was on the 7th of October. That is about 3 weeks ago. What I would like to know is that at what stage is the process to finalize this appointment? Secondly, the question that I have is with regard to misconduct. What I would like to know is that what are the types of misconduct cases that have been completed and which remain mostly incomplete? During the presentation, the DG also mentioned that in some of the cases that are outstanding, he mentioned various reasons. However, I'd like to zoom in to one of the reasons where he mentioned witnesses. I see clarity on what does it mean when he says witnesses. Does it mean they can't locate witnesses, or witnesses they have withdrawn, or what's really happening around there? I will appreciate a clarity on that. On the issue of the late registration of births, I have been covered with Honorable Pillay, but I would also like to reiterate that going forward, we will appreciate getting some information where we will know how long should it take for the department from the date of receiving the application to finalize the late registration of birth, because we have also picked up that it takes forever for members of the community to just get an interview. At times we also have to intervene to try and assist them to get the interviews in the relevant offices of applications. Chairperson, I have also noted the department that they've indicated that they have met their target of passport applications that were received locally. However, there was no indication of whether there's any targets that were reached on the application of passports that they are receiving from abroad. And I feel that it is very important for the department to give us details on this, because we do have South Africans that are working in other countries. I remember about a month ago, there was a lady that needed her passport to be renewed, and she indicated that if it is not renewed, she's going to lose her job. She was coming from London. She flew all the way from London and came to South Africa to submit her application. Mrs. Sigama was very helpful. Mrs. Sigama, thank you for that. But I think if we were able as a department to make this process as easy as possible, that move would not have been necessary. Chairperson, also on the Department of Immigration, we acknowledge and we have seen that there's a number of backlogs we are battling. I think at some point we have mentioned this in the department, that even though we are getting some feedback from Mr. Simons, but the officials that he is working with, they are not responding. At times it takes us forever. We end up sending lots and lots of follow-up emails. I remember at some point, because I was so frustrated, I ended up sending a WhatsApp to the minister and later spoke to Mr. Makode. There was one, I think it was an application for permanent residence, if I'm not mistaken. It was resolved after 4 months. I'd appreciate if the department can look into that as well. Lastly, Chairperson, the issue of network problem. I don't know whether when it comes to the branch appointment booking system, we are also experiencing challenges and what is the cause if it is also linked to CETA. Because from last week, I have been getting lots and lots of complaints around this issue. And some members of the community, they even take screenshots showing us that it takes forever for the page to load and others are not even getting the OTPs. So we'll appreciate clarity on this matter. Chairperson, another thing that was not indicated on this report and other reports that we have received previously, it is the issue of the registration of adoption. This report is MAM on the issue of registration of adoption. And I will appreciate it that even if it does not happen in this meeting, if the department can send us maybe an email before the end of the week, where they tell us how many applications for adoptions they have received and how many were finalized and within what period. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kanyile, for your contributions. Honorable Mudisimta. Honorable Mudise. Okay, thanks members for your comments and questions that were raised to the report. I think appreciation has already been done on the audit outcomes of the department. I think with the emphasis that we made to look on the areas that the AG has impressed on. And I think one of the areas we may need to track DG is the action plan that already you have presented before the committee. The other issue which is becoming a concern is on the bills, which if you recall, in fact, for the past three or since we've been in session, there was the indication that most of the bills by this 2022 would be presented before Parliament. And there's an indication that in one of your sites, you are indicating to outsource for the a specified people or those that will do the drafting of the bills. I'm trying to get a sense from the department whether that statement which previously was presented before the committee and now whether there's a reconciliation in terms of the process that the committee was briefed in terms of these bills. You will know that at some point the department will say that the bills are still within cabinet or the subcommittee of cabinet. And these are the key policy issues that affect the work of the department. And that will enhance once Parliament has considered them. What is the reasoning? I can hear you are bringing it. I think perhaps what is the reasoning behind the delays, notwithstanding that there are challenges within your legal unit, because it require that you may need to check up in that area. It will mostly affect the work that we are doing. We can't sit since the session of Parliament, the sixth Parliament, and we're completing the term next year in 2023. And your line of articulate in terms of the bills that must be dealt with is still not being drafted. And I don't think that it may be an attitude that the committee may need to appreciate in terms of delays that have been done. The last point which I wanted to have proper more, there's an indication of the quality of financial statements that were submitted, and I think there was an impression by the AG. What highlights that might have contributed to those lack of maintaining the standard of the financial statement to be considered by the AG. So I wanted just to raise amongst the issues that have been raised by members. We're going to now invite, we'll start with the issue, we'll start with the BMA, with the commissioner, then we'll invite the DG. The DG will then delegate as to who, in terms of the line of function, will respond to issues that members have raised. Then we invite the DM, and then the minister will also respond on the issues that members have raised. Can we work on that framework? Thanks, Commissioner.
No, thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to the committee members for the questions raised regarding the BMA, and thanks for the minister and the PM. Honourable Chair, maybe let me also give this broader point to say that Mr. Matonzi did send us the document, which does indicate that the BMA will be coming before the committee on the 22nd of November for a full presentation update in terms of the operationalization of the BMA, but also to present on our preparedness for the festive season. And of course, both of those reports are due to the committee on the 15th of November, and everything is on track to that extent. So I thought I just needed to indicate that my response will not be too detailed on the basis that we will be coming to do the fuller brief on the rest of the processes. But for now, in terms of responding to the two questions or three questions that came from Honorable Ruos as well as Honorable Pillay. Firstly, Honorable Ruos, on the issue of the appointment of the border guards as to whether they were appointed through a transfer from other government departments, let me first indicate, you will remember, Honorable members, that the BMA is established on two processes, the first one being the integration process and the second one being the capacitation. And of course, the transfer issue is relevant on the issues of integration, which is the process that is underway. But of course, the border guards then were brought in under the capacitation angle of the process. So to that extent, they did not come through a transfer, but they came through under a capacitation process, which was underpinned by an advertisement that we made in March, earlier in the year. And of course, in the advertisement, we indicated we wanted people that are already kind of experienced, trained in terms of law enforcement, and also even in terms of your ability to handle the tools of trade, such as guns and all that. So in that process, most of those came from the law enforcement space, and most of those came from the military, the police, Metro Police, and some of those structures. So they did not come by transfer, they came by application, because it was on the basis of an advertisement that was made. And maybe also just to indicate, the transfer for that process was not going to comply with the recruitment modalities within the framework, as it were. Maybe just to also indicate, there was an indication that maybe we can transfer the people that are called reserves from the military into the BMA. That was also not found to have been correct, on the basis that those reserve force members were or are not employees in government, but there are actually people that the military just call in at a particular point in time. And based on the labor relations provisions, we couldn't even do that process. Otherwise, it was going to be found very much problematic. And that is why we did the advert. And of course, those that qualified applied. So that is how we brought them in. Secondly, on the issue of the indication from National Treasury, just to indicate, Honorable Ruos, that if you listened to the minister's speech in terms of the medium-term budget policy statement, you will note that in the actual speech, the minister did not cite the issue of the Border Management Authority or even the issue of the SNDF. But if you go to page 42 of the actual medium-term budget policy statement, you will note there that the minister does indicate very explicitly that additional funding is being put aside by government for sending through into the Department of Home Affairs with the intention of operationalizing the BMA as a Schedule 3A public entity from April 2023. So that is the statement that came after the submission that we have made to National Treasury within the context of the medium-term expenditure framework. And in there, we were able to put in the financial requirements for the BMA in terms of the medium term, as it were. And we do hope, in responding also to the DG's point, whether we were able to receive the feedback. What I can say now, honorable members, is that based on that statement in the medium term budget policy statement, we do know that money is actually put aside for operationalizing BMA. The only thing that we don't have now is the actual letter of allocation. And the CFO is engaging with National Treasury to be able to get that, which will explicitly indicate how much actually is actually put aside. Whether everything that you've requested is going to be given in, or maybe there is a bit of adjustment. We don't have that as yet, but we do know that indeed BMA is to be operationalized by the 1st of April. So there is no any issue in as far as that part is concerned. And of course, the last question or point from Honorable Ruos and Honorable Chair is whether, what is the next plan if National Treasury does not finance the entire plan in terms of the operationalization of the BMA? What we can say to respond to this question, Honorable Members, is one, you will note that the integration process is bringing all of the colleagues who are already operating on the ground from the respective departments, four in particular in this instance, and those people are coming with their budgets, operational, they're coming with their salaries, they're coming with their tools of trade. So practically speaking, it means that BMA will still be able to function and be able to operate from the 1st of April. If the financing is not going to be brought in, it will just be on the basis of capacitation going forward. And we don't necessarily see that there is not going to be any. And therefore, it means that if we are to answer what is the other plan in case there is no new money, the plan is that we will be functioning as an integrated BMA, but will be very much undercapacitated. So that is the reality. But of course, we do hope that government should be able to give that additional money to be able to deal with it. The last question, Honorable Chair, is from Honorable Pillay, and that is also linked to the same issues that I've responded, and that is, what is the next cohort of the border guards? And when are they going to be approved, and when are they going to come into the fray? In terms of this particular question, we can indicate that indeed, in the request that we have made to National Treasury, we do indicate that we will need to recruit at least around 600 in the new financial year, and we have requested the finances to be able to do that. So we are waiting for that indication from National Treasury in terms of the allocation. Once we then get that affirmation, we should then be able to start the process with the view that when the new financial year hits, we will be at advanced stages to bring them on board in the next financial year. So those are the answers for now, Honorable Chair. Suffice to say, most of the other issues we'll talk about when we come exclusively to engage on the BMA. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. DG?
Thank you, Chair. And thanks to honorable members for the questions. We'll start by maybe allocating some of the questions to the TDGs that are responsible. I think Mr. Skama, you can look at the issues raised by Honorable Pillay on the LRB backlogs. and also the booking system, including issues raised by Honorable Kanyile with regards to LRBs as well. And then, of course, the CIO, you can speak to the challenges on the OTP. Okay, I think Honorable Kanyile, there was also an issue around adoption, which Mr. Skama will deal with. Of course, it's not included in the presentation because it's not one of those areas. It's not the target that's identified in the first or second quarter in the APP. And then, of course, there were issues raised by Honorable Ruos. If Acting DDG HR can deal with the issues around the resources at IMS, and then Mr. Simons, you can then comment on the backlogs with regards to the permitting area. So let me then start by indicating that the minister will then deal with the issue around the passport tariffs that were gazetted by the minister at the end of our presentations. The first one, Honorable Ross, I think it was more an update or your observations on the BMCS. We have an intervention team that's looking at some of the challenges that were being experienced, but the BMCS is not as if it's an option. If we are to enhance our security features at the airports, we need to make sure that we do roll out the BMCS. But linked to that is the support that we are receiving from SARS with regards to the implementation and the network and the rollout of the BMCS. So there were teething problems, as we admitted during the previous presentation, but we are managing those quite well. And then in the permitting area, Honorable Ruos, with regards to critical skills, business, and so on and so forth, we've indicated we've shared with the committee the plan with regards to what is it that we are doing with regards to those critical areas. One of them, we've set up a task team between ourselves and the Department of Trade, Industry, and Competition to look mainly at the critical skills, business, and work visas. I think by quarter three, you should be able to see those numbers. We also have brought in, as we've said, an additional team from provinces, and we're also adding additional capacity, about 16 adjudicators to assist us with that. You've also indicated that, or you questioned whether some is linked to the suspensions with regards to capacity, of course. There are about six officials. One has been dismissed, the chief director, and then, of course, in the appeals area, it's the director who's currently on suspension, and then the four others that are currently facing suspensions for various areas related to the permitting area. We can indicate that there's no crisis in the permitting area. We've beefed up that area, and we should be able to demonstrate the outputs in terms of the interventions that we are making. With regards to legal services, the reality is there's only one deputy director legislative drafting at legal services, and the one current acting director, Advocate Moses Malakate. So you're sitting with about two. So you don't have a lot of resources at legal services. And I suppose this was indicated at some point during the visit by the Portfolio Committee to the Department of Home Affairs. The area that was beefed up, Honorable Ross, was more the litigation side. And of course, the bulk of the people that were employed are working in that space in the litigation side. I'd love to check some of the comments that you made with regards to the case that you've referred to. We can share with you the performance of the offices abroad at an opportune time in terms of what is being done in terms of processing applications. The current pilot was mainly for the UK. Of course, our intention is to ensure that the footprint of Home Affairs is expanded to other areas in support of the missions. And we currently are looking at expanding some of the services depending on our own assessment. I think it was New Zealand and Australia. Those are areas that are currently under consideration. Now, with regards to the employment for the digitization, you'll recall that, and the acting DDJHR can speak more to this, we had engaged the Department of Employment and Labor through the Employment Services of South Africa, or ESA, to assist us in the recruitment of young people for the 10,000 digitization positions. And that work is continuing. I think they've started with shortlisting the candidates, and acting DDGHR can speak to that. And Honorable Pillay, with regards to the booking system, we now are performing at more than 160 offices throughout the country. And the next phase now is to roll out the collection phase. The application phase has stabilized, and we've seen what it's able to do. We now are working on the collection phase, and we hope that in this quarter in particular, we should be able to finalize that phase to make sure that it's optimal and then it works. We can be able to provide you with data. Mr. Skama can speak to IDs that are not collected with regards to that. Now, on the bills, honorable members, we do have a plan. I think it's a question that Honorable Ruos, Honorable Pillay, and Honorable Kanyile have raised. We do have an implementation plan with regards to how we're going to recover. And Chairperson, you asked the question as to what has happened to the process that we communicated to the committee. And the chair will recall that what was approved by cabinet and the cabinet committees were policies. This was the one-stop border post policy, the marriage policy, and the official management, identity management policy. So that process was done. We concluded that process with cabinet and all the committees. Now what we are currently doing is to make sure that the legislative aspect of those policies is attended to. And in terms of our own implementation plan for November, we hope to go to the International Cooperation Trade and Security Cluster. So these are the clusters that we've identified that we will be consulting. And then from there, we'll then go to the Global and Continental Affairs Committee just to update the bills to reflect comments that we'll have received from the ICTS cluster. And there's a deadline for the 17th of November. And thereafter, we'll go to the Governance, State Capacity and Institutional Development Cluster on the 24th of November to update them on the bills in terms of what we would have received. And then we hope that at least by then we would have 3 days before the next cluster. The next one will be the DEFCOM, which is the Development Committee that sits on the 12th of December. Again, that's on track. And the last one will be the JCPS track cluster that sits on the 15th of December. So that's the plan, and it's something that we can share with the committee in terms of how we're going to attend to the bills. And then, of course, it's how internally we're going to manage the bills. Parallel to this will be bringing those bills to EXCO and taking them to the minister for and the deputy minister for final comments. Once we've done that, we'll then take them through the clusters and the cabinet committees for final approval. And we hope that by the end of February 2023, we would have finalized some of the processes for the publication of the bills for further work that needs to be done. So let me then invite the identified DDGs to speak briefly to the issues that have been raised. Maybe starting with you, DDG Sigama, on the LRBs and the adoptions. And then Mr. Mabasa can speak to the OTP, followed by DDG HR, and then Mr. Simons. Over to you, colleagues.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair, Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, for the opportunity. I'll start with the first one, but I'll provide some highlights on that. The DM will be providing details. The first one is around the late registration of birth, which is LRBs. Honorable members, as they are aware, the Act makes provision for four categories of when you register birth. The first one is to register birth within 30 days. The second category deals with additional three categories that which deals with the birth registration registered after 30 days, which is then later considered as late registration. Then first category within LRB says 31 days to 1 year is one of the categories that we work with, and that category indeed is being managed through an office, wherein the office manager has to make sure that they then get other officials to then adjudicate and get gather reasons why parents were unable to register a birth within a 30-day period. So once they have satisfied the requirements, then the office is able to then register that particular birth without any other problem. Then the third category, it deals with those that are 1 year, but they are less than 15 years. So that's the category that requires additional documentation so that we certify ourselves, we verify everything that has been provided by the parent to check, and they must also provide reasons why they were not able to register birth within 30 days. So if we are satisfied, we then register that. But if not, we then take that a particular case to review for review so that they provide us with additional information. Then the last category is for those that are 15 years and above. That's the category which is being managed and chaired by the provincial manager, and it is as per the appointment. So all clients who come to our offices who are 15 years and above, we believe that they know who they are, and we believe that those are people who can give us relevant information. And once they've provided us with such information, we then send it to our immigration to validate, verify, and also interview further informants that are noted in our registers before we could even allocate the new ID numbers. So that process is a bit long. It takes on average 180 days because once information is gathered, it's then referred to our immigration. Immigration will interview the relevant people. Thereafter, they would then take fingerprints and forward them to back office for back office to further verify if there is a registration of such a client was not done into our system. So that process in its own, as we've indicated, takes a bit of time, but we have to make sure that we then provide regular information to clients as and when we get in updates from our systems. At times, honorable members, we do find that there are people who want to change their own identity by saying they were not born in this particular year, yet when you search on the system, you find that they're already registered. Or already they want to take other people's information and then they present if it's their own. So those are some of the challenges. Another challenge that was picked is that clients tend to provide us with incomplete information. And at the end, it then takes time for immigration to give us reports to say, no, indeed, so-and-so is related to so-and-so, or we have now satisfied ourselves when we're conducting our own investigation that is the rightful person for that, for those particular names and the age that have been provided. So those are some of the challenges, but we have now, within our own regulations, we have made provision. And within the SOP, we also make provisions in terms of the value chain on how many days, how long does it take to process certain application, and when do we give feedback to clients. Remember, there's also an SMS that gets generated once the case is finalized or when, as and when there are challenges experienced. So the next question, Chairperson, was around BAPS. I think DG shed more light. Suffice to say, we have got more than 160 offices with BAPS. We continue to roll it out to all offices. And indeed, system stability is something that the department is looking at, because as and when there's load shedding, we may miss some of the appointments, but we have realized that the system makes provision for us to further engage with the clients. Hence, we felt we should also further roll this activity out for collection purposes so that our clients should not spend more time waiting on queues. Then the fourth one, Chair, was about uncollected IDs. I would like to inform the honourable members that as at the 30th of September, the department found itself sitting with 463,387 smart IDs that lies in our offices uncollected. And out of the 463,387, we run our analysis against the system, and we then discovered that 55,434 are diseased, meaning that those are people that unfortunately they lost their lives and before they could come and collect their IDs. Then this means that literally we are sitting with about 407,000, which I think when you look at the age analysis, majority of those smart ID cards were issued during this financial year. More than 200,000 were issued this financial year, and which shows that indeed the outreach and the program that we have put as a department are really working. What we are now going to do with our communications is to intensify our communications that we encourage people to come and collect their IDs as and when they have applied for them. As you have might have seen now, it takes a shorter turnaround time for us to issue IDs. It doesn't take those longer days as before. So we really urge the public to come forward and collect their IDs because most of them are really sitting in our offices uncollected. Then there was an issue around manual passports that were not included into our targets. Indeed, it's true, Honorable Kanyele, it did not include manual passports, particularly for those that are from abroad, because it takes really, we don't have systems that are in place to then monitor the process of issuing manual passports, particularly for those that are from abroad. But suffice to say, we out of our manual statistics, we have got we receive plus minus 3,000 applications per month from those living abroad. And I must say the pilot that was conducted recently, it's also helping us because out of that system, we have now been able to detect the number of applications that are there and also the turnaround time of those that have to be sent back. So on average, we for those that are already piloted, we have got about 300 cases that are being received on a weekly basis. And those passports indeed could be accounted for without any difficulty. The plan is to roll out that program so that we then at the end automate our processes from those that are abroad. And once we get to that point, obviously Parliament will be updated on the work that we'll be doing at that time. Then the last point, DJ and Chairperson and Honorable Members, was around the issue of adoption. I heard Honorable Kanyele indicating that they would like us to provide information in writing. But the long and short of it, Honorable, is that for adoption, the department heavily relies on the Department of Social Development and Justice to provide us with information. As and when the applicant approaches social development, they collate all the papers. After that, then they go to the registrar of adoption, who will then finalize the documentation and issue an order, which will then work closely with justice. And Home Affairs is just at the receiving end, wherein we have to make sure that once all documentations are provided, we look into the quality of the documents and we register and issue a birth certificate. So, but anyway, what we will do, we'll make sure that we provide statistics on the applications that have been received from all those departments and what we have done on each one of them. So, DJ, I think those are the questions that were sent to my side, and I would like to hand back to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mr. Mabaso. Through your chair.
Thank you.
Just
thank you, DJ. Thanks, Kichi. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, Minister and Future Minister. In relation to the one-time PIN issue, the OTP, the delay was on the CETA side. This has since been fixed. However, we were recently advised of information security issues related to OTP. And this may be another reason for this going wrong every now and then due to vulnerabilities associated with what is known as the SS7 communications protocol for communications over the telephone line or GSM. The team has since been instructed rather to effect a reversal of the OTP routes as one of the security measures. is one of the architecture changes that are happening as we go. So until we've completed those changes, we'll keep running into this OTP era. That is in addition, as honorable members have pointed out, to the issues of the network. I can further expand on this, DG, but I'm aware that we are coming back to Parliament next week to talk on the network issues, and that would also talk to the some of the questions raised by the Honorable Bile. Thanks. I'll take your guidance, DG and Chair.
No, I think that is fair enough. We'll take forward some of the issues in our next presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. If I can invite acting DG HR on the suspension.
Thank you. Thank you, DG, and good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, and DM, and the Honorable Members. I think as DG has indicated, Chairperson, the suspensions that DG spoke about within permitting has indicated that the one chief director that has been dismissed and the director as well, the four other colleagues are currently undergoing discipline. The hearing is currently undergoing. Members would recall that we reported that the case was to sit on the 25th and 26th of September. It did sit and however had to proceed again in the next week of November, the second week of November. And in relation to capacitation in that area, did you also mention the fact that from the capacitation point of view, we have identified 16 adjudicators, the process of which is underway. We are now currently in the shortlisting process, and we are anticipating, you know, to conduct interviews and finalize the process during the end of November or first week of December, because this is also dependent on the suitability checks that have to be undertaken for the identified applicants or possible candidates that would be appointed for these positions. And the other matter that DG would have wanted me to respond to was the issue around the 10,000. It is correct that we had indicated that we are going to undertake this project in trenches or in phases. We are still in the phase one where we have recruited the 2,000. This week, we are wrapping up the interviews. We are left with only two provinces, Limpopo, which will be concluding today, and we'll be concluding Gauteng tomorrow. And we will be then finalizing appointment of the recommended youth who will then be undertaking training mid-November with the anticipated appointment date of the 1st of December, as you've indicated in the project plan. DG, one of the other matters that Honorable Kanyile has raised was on the reasons that we could not achieve the misconduct case within the 90 working days period was because the witnesses were not available, and Honorable Member wanted to find out what does this mean. And the response to that is that when the date has been set for a hearing to take place and it doesn't take place and it has to be postponed, and one of the reasons could have been that a witness that was supposed to be coming to that hearing was not available for one reason or the other, probably being sick or really not being available on the date that has been indicated. I think DG, that are the only few matters that I needed to respond to. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Simons.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Good morning, Minister, Deputy Minister, and DG. DG, you've touched on particularly the questions raised by Honorable Ruth and Honorable Pillay about performance related and what are we going to do to achieve our target in quarter three and four. DG has already touched on the extra capacity that we brought in, but particularly also the weekly tracking and recovery plan meetings we have with DG every Wednesday. So what we have implemented is that all the applications that we see, we do an age analysis, and on a weekly basis, we get the applications at risk of missing the target. We prioritize those. Those are the APP-related targets. We brought in the extra resources, as DG indicated, both from provinces and from other sections within the IMS branch, to just capacitate the areas that we have shortages, particularly quality assurance one, where we brought in and assisting, getting assistance from the provinces. The some assistant directors, they don't have to come and sit in Pretoria. They can work from their offices where they are. We've trained them and we provided access to VAST so that they can deal with quality assurance one. Quality assurance two, we brought in some directors from our head office, also some DMOs to assist us there. Similarly with quality assurance three, Honorable Ruiz. So we've also capacitated the other levels because the backlog and APP application stretches over all the quality assurance levels. Quality assurance three, for example, we brought in two additional chief directors and, as DG indicated, also some PMs. And quality assurance four are also DDG in the form of CFOs also assisting in that regard. So in terms of overtime, we've also, from October, we've implemented overtime for the teams, both during the week as well as weekends. So that's also assisting us not only in the backlog, but also in terms of the APP targets and closely monitoring the age analysis and knowing full well which applications are going into a red area, which means we need to possibility of missing the target. So we all need to just focus on those applications. I can also say that Ms. Stefanetso spoke about additional capacity in the form of filling of posts. We have advertised 16 adjudicator posts. We will be commencing with our shortlisting now. The significant part of that is that the criteria that we identified is legally qualified persons. So that will really assist us in the quality of adjudications because we have high number of litigation cases. I think Honorable Ruiz mentioned that we need to improve the quality of our decision makers. So this cohort of 16 adjudicators, legally qualified persons, is really going to make an impact in that regard. Another important intervention is operations management that we started from middle of October. We brought in a director and a deputy director. The director is our expert on operations management. Operations management, particularly in a permitting and adjudication hub area, is to identify targets for individual officials. They ensure there's daily meetings, operations meetings in the morning. So there's a full-time person on board that also reports to the DDG's office. That's a very important element to monitor and track daily performance of adjudicators, quality assurance 1, 2, 3, and 4, and as we go about. Another important intervention that we've made is we had, through the acting chief director, Mr. Mbeli, we arranged a permitting colloquium. It's a discussion, a meeting point with all the permitting staff over 2 days. We split them over 2 days, and we had Mr. Warwick Meyer, who was a member of the Lubisi Commission. He came and also presented to the teams. Because Honorable Ruiz indicated about the investigation that was conducted. So that's important for us also to allay the fears with the officials. Mr. Meyer, Warwick took them through the analysis of the report, but also identified key areas that we should focus on to detect fraudulent practices and fraudulent documents. So that was also very valuable for us. Together with that, we had a session to retrain all our adjudicators in the work that they do. Another key addition or intervention is the access to the VAS system. The visa adjudication system can only be done at the Home Affairs office through the network. We've indicated that to Portfolio Committee before. We have signed a change request and requested IT to change that from director upwards, senior management, that you can also do adjudications remotely, which means that after hours, you can still, myself, the DG, the chief director, we can still work to ensure that we achieve these targets and we make sure we make a contribution to the backlog. Those are some of the interventions that we implemented because we're sitting with the APP target applications from missions abroad, which is also vitally important for us that relates to investment targets of the country, the backlogs that we continuously report against. And then just finally, DJ, I want to add what Honorable Kanili indicated about the communication from IMS, from the immigration branches, that we have collaborated and in partnership with the Home Affairs Contact Center we have created a query management desk with a contact center. There's seven clerks, officials from the contact center will now be dedicated to the IMS immigration inquiries. We created a IMS query email address. There's a nodal point for every chief director in the IMS environment. But for the permitting environment, we've identified four senior nodal points because that's where most of our queries come in. I will be taking this to the EXCO on Monday, this presentation, to identify the actions that we're going to take to deal with the queries, but not only the queries, but the communication to the clients, so that is an important element that we keep clients informed of once they've lodged the queries with us. Thank you very much, DG. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Simon. So just in conclusion, Chair, we've also had various engagements, stakeholder engagements, for example, with the Japan Trade Mission, which represents a number of companies, which will include Mitsubishi, Toyota, and all those companies mainly that will be bringing expertise into the country. And we've finalized all those matters, including with the French Trade Commission, which would have included companies such as Leroy, Merlin, Total Energies, and so on and so forth, including the German Trade Commission, which amongst others its affiliate will include BMW, Mercedes-Benz, VW, and so on and so forth. So that work, it's ongoing, Honorable Ruos, in terms of stakeholder engagement, so that we're able to track and give regular feedback to those companies to make sure that we continue to support economic growth in the country. Thank you, Chairperson. Over to you, Minister.
Okay, thank you, TG. And thanks for your team for taking members of the committee on some of the issues that they've raised, but also going beyond the comments and questions that they raised. Well appreciated. I'm going to now invite the Deputy Minister to comment. Deputy Minister?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to go a bit further on one issue, which is around the issues of early birth registration. I think our position has always been that we must encourage early birth registration because it solves quite a number of problems that we are not supposed to be having around confusion on citizenships, and also for us to maintain a proper and a credible population register. So it is very important that we encourage early birth registration. And I can confirm, Chair, that if all supporting documents, late birth registrations do not take a lot of time, with the exception of the 15-year-olds, as Mr. Sekama was saying. Even if it's an LRP, immediately after those 30 days, a person comes in and they have the record of birth from the hospital, they have the records and all the documents for the parents and so on. It doesn't really take us quite a lot of time. We are able to process them quickly. What we have learned through Izimbizo that we have been dealing with going around the country is that LRB is not really what is causing the delay. The delay is around parents who leave their children at home with grandparents, and grandparents then struggle to register those particular children because the people who are responsible for making sure that those children are registered have actually left the system. And I think what we ought to be doing is to encourage parents to make sure that they go to early birth registration so that the grandparents or aunts or adopted parents do not have to go through the difficulty of getting those documents, and as such, creating an impression that early birth, late birth registration is too cumbersome. It is not cumbersome, too cumbersome if everything is there. But I do think that as a department will then look with the civics unit on a robust system on how do we deal with children that do not have parents present in their lives, because they can't be punished on the basis that their parents are not really coming to the fore and taking responsibility. In the main, it is fathers. And I would like to say this thing in the portfolio committee. It's something that we have been saying almost in all these imbizos and community engagement that we've been going through, that every time we issue a birth certificate, fathers are rarely there appearing on the birth certificate. They do not participate. And it creates a problem also for the child at a later stage when they want to change a surname or do any other issues that they would want. So we really encourage fathers to also be present so that they are there at a point of registration for the child. Yes, we are going to continue putting up infrastructure which will assist with early birth registration, since you will have seen that our self-financing resources are now coming back and they are growing, which means we are now going to be able to invest on our hospital project. We do know that we missed the target for the second quarter on early birth registration, but it should not be a struggle for us to pick up, such that overall in the entire year, we are able to meet that particular deadline. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister, for your response and comments. Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. A lot of questions have already been answered. I just want to augment here and there. Firstly, on the issue, honorable rules of the drafting skills. I think the DG has already answered. When the portfolio committee came to Home Affairs early in 2019 to check what's happening in the legal section, it was mostly about litigation issues, which you remember were also raised by the Auditor General, where some of the cases on which Home Affairs was litigated don't got concluded for a long time, and the amount appears on our audit negatively as contingent liability. So we concentrated on that. But I've just learned recently, it's not that I knew about this for a long time, that there's a general shortage of lawyers with legislative drafting skills. The only drafter we had has been taken by the Department of Justice. When I thought we were going to that department to ask for capacity, to ask them to capacitate us with skills for drafting, only to find that actually they are looking for that skills from us, and that's how they took the only person who was doing drafting and was struggling to fill that post. That is why, honorable members, when we came to the Electoral Laws Amendment Act, we did not even try to do it in-house. We immediately went outside. Otherwise, if we tried it in-house, it would have been a disaster. So we are trying to find ways to deal with this matter in such a way that we no longer have to come to you and give it as an excuse. But I just want to tell you that there's a dearth of lawyers around the whole government system who have got legislative drafting skill. It looks like it's a special skill which not everybody or every lawyer was interested in. Most probably it might be because when people go to do law, they look at areas that will make them active, like being a constitutional law expert or a criminal law expert or corporate lawyer. I think this area of drafting of legislation was not attractive to people because maybe it's not even much well known. On the issue of passports and their prices, honorable members, I think there's even an advert trying to explain to people. The last time we looked at the prices of our passport is 2011. Now, we don't produce this passport free of charge. They are printed for us by government printing works. And government printing works charges us money. Now, can you imagine where we go to government printing works? They charge us money, we pay. But when the holder of the passport comes, they pay much less than what we produce the passport for. That obviously is not sustainable. Nobody can sustain any business model like that, where you produce goods for a higher amount, but you sell them for a lower amount. But we didn't just jump when we realized this, we wanted to benchmark, and so we got a service provider to benchmark us with other countries around the world, those at the same level of, I mean, the economy, whose economy is at the same level as ours, those who are a little bit lower and those who are higher. And we found that our prices are far off the mark, sometimes even being three times lesser than what's happening in other countries. It is for these reasons, actually, the prices you see which are starting today are half of what we wanted. We actually wanted to increase them by 100%, but because in the legislation, we have to discuss with the Minister of Finance, with the Treasury. It is the Treasury that pegged them at an increase of 50% when we actually wanted 100. So we still believe, even with the prices that are starting today, they are still lower than actually what they should be or what we wanted. But unfortunately, we have to accept what the Treasury's ruling at putting the passports where they are. We also felt, I felt compelled to answer this question, honorable members, because I could not answer the question why we are subsidizing a South African passport with so much money, but we are not doing so to the ID. The ID is needed by every South African, even the poorest of the poor, but we are not having subsidies on it. Passports are usually taken by people who are well-to-do, but we put a heavy subsidy on it. I couldn't just reconcile my understanding of life with that. And so that's why we had to do what we have done. Honorable Kanyile, on the issue of misconduct, and I'm happy, honorable members, that you take special interest on this issue of misconduct. I really want honorable members here to appreciate the cases we are dealing with in Home Affairs are not really minor cases. This is not a traffic cop taking a bribe for a motorist who has broken traffic regulations and want to get free, and the bribery is paid on the spot. That's peanuts. Here we are talking of huge amounts of money, huge amounts, which sometimes are also levied by people who are syndicated, who are syndicates. You know, I'm sure Honorable Lizelle van der Merwe might remember the other time she asked a question about patriotism when it comes to these issues of corruption. And I gave an example, which is true, that there can never be a thinking of patriotism from the type of people we are dealing with, because they've kept their lives on corruption and they know no other way of living than corruption. I gave an example of one of the most junior officials we have just caught recently. I think it's last month when he got arrested. Very junior, post level 6. I'm sure you know what a post level 6 is. But he owns a Range Rover, which many of you here, honorable members, you can't afford. He owns Mercedes-Benz. He owns 3 other cars, which he has bought cash, and a huge garage in the far rural areas of Limpopo, where he keeps those cars. I mean, when you charge that type of a person, don't think they will just say, yes, I was caught and move like a lamb to slaughter. No, they put up a big fight in terms of postponement, getting doctors to write medical certificates, getting the lawyer who is representing them to fall sick or have other commitments for the next 3 months. And so it's a big battle. And recently, honorable members, there's a huge fight back. And I really want to take this opportunity to inform you about the huge fight back we are experiencing from these people who are charging. They are turning the tables against us, informing the public that we are the ones who are corrupt. I was actually expecting members here to ask me a question about the recent articles that have appeared in the Star. I think there were already 3 of them. But I'm also happy, on the other hand, that you are not asking me because it means you did not even take them to heart, or you did not even take them serious. But they are making very serious allegations that are meant to damage those who are conducting this investigation. I'm sure you saw the first article in the Star, which also affects me, because there was my picture there in the front page talking about sex scandals and corruption. One of our lead investigators, who doesn't even drink alcohol, he doesn't take alcohol at all. The story there was about him going on a drinking spree and getting ladies of the night and refusing to pay them, and they got angry and robbed him, and he stole, he took a government car which he was driving, and the department is not doing anything about it. And the members never even took a government car. They even put their number plate there. That car they've put there does not even exist in the department. The man doesn't even drink, but he has been going to a drinking spree. And when he was even drugged and found drugged, it worries us, it scares us. And I'm sure you honorable members, you have called Advocate Connie Moise here to this platform to know her as the new DDG for counter-corruption. And you appreciated the work you are doing, and you demanded reports from her. In that report, they say she's doing nothing about this corruption, and nobody can touch her because she's in love with the minister. I mean, this even destroys people's families. Now, when we were still shocked about that, it came to the chief director responsible for law enforcement in immigration, the boss of the immigration officers, who goes around doing inspections around. He happens to be a brother of Mr. Minister Naledi Pandor. And they said in May, we suspended her, and Minister Pandor phoned me, and we drove the suspension. That man has never been suspended, so Minister Pandor will not have phoned me. And at any rate, I won't take kindly to any minister phoning me to do favors to whoever they like in the department. But these stories are appearing in newspapers as the gospel truth. Even the issue of e-visas, we having light and all that. So we are in the midst of something called Operation Tanza, which is targeted at President Ramaphosa, and it's dragging us along in Home Affairs. If you look at all those articles, they start with President Ramaphosa's cabinet involved in sexual misconduct, involved in corruption and all that. So this is war. It's a fight back from people who are corrupt. But I want to assure you, we are not going to wink and pull back and get scared from this type of stories. But they started to appear quite frequently in the Star newspaper. When we realized this is Operation Tanza, I thought they were just going to write negative stories, which sometimes newspapers do. No, they even write something that does not exist, something that has not happened. They put it there as a reality and put it in the front page of the newspaper. Mr. Mudiri Matthews was even linked romantically to one of the officials who have left, and they said she has left to the president's office through contact of Mr. Mudiri Matthews, who went to the presidency and asked for, this is terrible news that puts the department as if we are a group of corrupt people who are confused, who are immoral, who don't know what they are doing, all in the name of leaving these people to hoard these huge sums of money, as given you an example about. So I want honorable members to realize that this is not a small fight. You'll remember the gentleman who gave Bushiri his papers. Before we could even put him to a DC, we had to go to court 3 times. He took us to labor court just to stop the DC. Then he lost. Then he appealed. Then he lost. Then he petitioned the Labor Appeals Court. Then he lost. And we started the DC process. And they bring lots of senior counsels who bring all sorts of excuses why the cases need to be postponed. So honorable members, please appreciate that this is what we are dealing with. The last issue about the registration of adoption. Oh, no, last part, not, sorry, the last part one. The adoptions, I think Mr. Sigama has already responded, Honorable Kanyile. please appreciate that in adoption, we come right at the end. We are never involved in a process of adoption. Our involvement is to issue the necessary document about whose name that adopted child must take. That's where we come in. Otherwise, all this work is done by justice and social development. And only when they come to us ready with everything, we give the same name, just in the same way as anybody comes with their child for the registration of birth, we'll do so. Now, the last one about delays, even this morning I was on ENCA for the whole hour. They were asking me about these delays, rectification, change of surname. I want honorable members to understand that we don't choose surnames for people, of course. They choose for themselves, their spellings and all that, and they come and change. But I want honorable members to appreciate not everybody who is rectifying their surname or changing their date of birth or rectifying the spelling on their surname. Not everybody is doing so for good cause. Not everybody is doing it for that. Some of them are doing it clearly for criminal intention or for corruption. And what am I talking about? There are people who want to change the spelling of their surnames because they've got criminal cases in the court and they want to become a complete different person. There are people who own shops. They own Foschini or whatever, where they buy clothes. And somebody told them that they can change their identity by coming to Home Affairs to do rectification and become a totally new person. Now, for us to do this rectification, to make sure that we don't experience the things I've mentioned, we've got to go into the archives and check. This person changing the same name, what were they originally? Who are their relatives? Why are they changing? Now you remember that the records we go to check from are the 350 million records, which dates back from 1895, which are all manual. It's only now when we're hiring these 10,000 people to digitize the records that it will be faster. But we still have to go to those manual records to change before rectification. Other people change their date of birth, not because it's a mistake, no, because their time of retirement has arrived and they want to postpone it by 5 years. Others still, because of the high unemployment rate, they want to go to SASA, but they are still 5 years before they can earn from SASA old age grant, and they want to increase their years so that they earn from SASA. And they also come to Home Affairs to say, my date of birth is a mistake and all that. So these are all the things we are dealing with. And I'm not giving them to you as excuses. I want you to appreciate because this is part of your work also. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister, for your comments and response. I deliberately allowed members to comment without stopping them, and allowed also the team DG, your team, the DG and the commissioner, to have time to articulate the responses. I think this assists us to get in touch with the issues that our people all will able to articulate them in a manner that has been responded by your team, Minister. We are taking note of the progress that has been made, and I think members have already expressed their appreciation to the work that has been done. Taking note on the commitment you are making to improve on some of the areas that could not meet targets on the reasons that have been we have already presented. We want to appreciate that the work and taking note of the report as presented by the committee. We will then monitor the tracking the work as action plan is demonstrating. The other issues we'll be interfacing with as we meet next week or in the coming portfolio committee meeting in relation to the issues that are sitting at the Border Management Authority, and also on the issues that Mr. Mabaso has highlighted in his report that will be coming up. So that, I think, will give us a confidence in terms of service work for our people, and to improve the entire system of the department. We may need to pay more attention to the legal unit, just to get a sense in terms of the responses that were coming from the DDG. Mr. Matonzi, we may need to have a dedicated slot to venture in that area to identify some of the issues that members have raised over time since we have visited the department. The minister has highlighted our visit to the department. What were the progress, the improvement? What are the issues that are coming up in the process of dealing with this program? I don't think we must get worried, Minister, and I'm not sure that it's you who raised this matter, that there's fight back from the system. We may need to strengthen the hand to squeeze more, so that we're able to root out the system corrupt that has been identified. We can't stand back when there's a fight back. And I think that is demonstration that is work that has been exerted to the system. You can't fight back when you don't have pressure or don't have anything. But I think it's a demonstration of work that is an enforcement that the committee is able to do that. We must appreciate the DDG. We're quite taking note of the Luisi Commission. That you have already get into the space to interface in the report that has been presented to the committee, to your system or staff or those are responsible, to highlight key issues that were identified, and those are the issues that we must work on. And I think also on that front, the anti-corrupt unit, corruption unit, we must able to complement what the recommendation are coming out from that report, and make sure that they're implemented. When we come back in our next report, Minister, or in fact, we may need to take stock on some of the issues that commitment was presented to the committee, and the issues that members have raised to this meeting. I want to take this opportunity on behalf of members to thank the entire team led by yourself, the minister, for having considered to take notes on some of the issues that members have raised and commitment on the action plan that ought to be responded. Thanks very much, Minister. We are going to release the department now, Mr. Matonzi, to deal with the last item that was presented by the content advisor. Is there any other matter outside this presentation, Mr. Matonzi?
No, Chairperson, there's no other matter except that issue of the job description of the IEC Commission.
Yes. Thanks, Minister, and your team. I think we can release your team. We're going now to deal with the last item.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just give me a minute to load the presentation. It's Adam here.
Adam, I've made you a cost.
Thank you, Chair.
Eddie, can you see?
Yes, I can see it.
Thank you. Okay, just to indicate the letter, we updated it briefly based on the members' input, particularly from the chairperson. The letter just indicates that the the committee had considered the job descriptions of the respective commissioners and report back that having considered all the legislation, including the Constitution in Chapter 9, the Electoral Commission Act and its various clauses, and the Public Dimensional Management Act, the concerns that the committee had were that the job descriptions showed no differences between the part-time and full-time commissioners, nor the chairperson and the vice-chairperson. And so how would they distinguish between their respective roles? Secondly, for the two full-time commissioners, other than the vice-chair and chairperson, who would decide what their respective priorities would be? Is their job descriptions also the same? I need to ensure unnecessary duplication, but to prevent unnecessary duplication. And then thirdly, who decides on how what time is spent on and what weighting is allocated for each of the key performance areas? Once there's left blank in the job description that was provided to the committee to consider. So that's a very brief report, but just highlighting the key issues there. Chairperson, then I hand it back to you. I believe you wanted to allow the members to have time to consider the report.
No, thanks, Mr. Stanmon. So the members made comments in our last committee meeting. I've also made my notes on the which I've sent for your attention in terms of the comments that were requested to impress on this correspondence. Is there any other matter, members, we need to deal with, or we can note the correspondence and forward it to the House Chair, to the Chair of Chairs? Can I get indication of the approval to proceed?
There's a hand from Ms. Kanyile, Chair.
Ms. Kanyile, Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you, Chairperson. You are correct in saying in the previous meeting, we have already commented on this report. And we approved this report that it can be sent through as is, and then we await feedback, and then we will then deliberate on it as soon as we get feedback. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Pillay.
Thank you very much. Yes, I second that proposal.
Okay, any other different view? Okay, I think let's approve the report and submit this, and then we'll interface with it as it comes back to our attention. Is that will assist us, Mr. Salmon?
Perfect, sir.
Okay. Thanks, members. Thanks very much for considering the notes and also for the interaction on the second and third quarter report of the department. Thanks very much. Mr. Matonsi, is there any other announcement?
No, there's no announcement, Chair, except that we've got another meeting next week where we'll be dealing with the department in CETA on the meeting that we postponed the other day.
No, thanks very much, members. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.